Good evening. This is Heartstock Radio, and I'm Carol Murphy. Thanks again for listening. It is such a beautiful day here in beautiful Butte, Montana. I wish y'all could smell the lilacs in my backyard. It's really, really nice. This evening, we have Ryan Honeyman with us, and he is part of the Lyft Economy team. I cannot wait for you to hear all of the things that Ryan is up to. Just a moment, we will be right back, and Ryan's going to introduce himself. Thanks for listening.
The ribbon of highway, I saw above me, that endless skyway, I saw below me, that golden valley, this land was me, you and me. I roamed and rambled, and I followed my footsteps to the sparkling sands of a diamond dance. And all around me, a voice was sounding, this land was made for you and me.
This is Carol Murphy, and you are listening to Heartstock Radio. This evening, we have Ryan Honeyman with us. Hi, Ryan.
Hi, Carol. Thanks for having me on.
So, you're in California, correct?
I am indeed, in the San Francisco Bay Area.
And what's the weather like there right now?
Right now, it's sunny, not too bad. I always shudder talking about California weather because usually it's worse other places. So I don't like to draw the ire of listeners.
Well, there's one place on the planet that at this particular time of the year is way better than California. That's all I'm going to say. But fair you're enough. Right. It's when it's 50 below, we'll talk. So,
absolutely.
Please introduce yourself to our guests and tell them what it is that you are up to.
Sure. So, yeah, Ryan Honeyman. I'm a partner at a worker-owned cooperative consulting company called Lyft Economy. And what I'm up to is a few different things. Mm-hmm. One of the things I'm most engaged with right now is the certified B Corp movement. So if folks... I know there are some B Corps in Montana, and so the B Corp movement, for folks who don't know, is basically a movement for people to use the power of business as a force for good. So it's basically saying, how can we harness the power of business, which is, we all know, is a lot of power, but use that power to benefit society and the environment. So that's the main thing I'm up to, along with the another investment piece, which we may talk about a little later, called the Force for Good Fund, which is an investment fund we started. So happy to dip into any of those topics if you're up to it.
You know, we might have to have you come back because there's so much that we have to talk about. So what I suggest we do is just kind of tackle them one by one, and I'm sure we're going to need to have you come back if you're up for that. So let's begin. I'm listening to your book, The B Corp Handbook, and there's so much excellent information in there, very, very valuable. Why don't we start there? But before we do that, tell everybody a little about your background and what was your inspiration for going into this endeavor, taking this on, and the site, the foresight, what led to that?
Yeah, well, I don't have a background in sustainability or social business. I actually studied psychology and criminal justice in school. So my grand plan back in college was to reform the prison system. And how it eventually got into the business for good world was working in prison reform and criminal justice is very powerful. And yet I found that I was so steeped in sort of the problem, you know, the end, like how do you fix the challenge that a lot of these people face with going back, you know, the cycle of crime and recidivism. And so I said, I really need to try and figure out what I can do to sort of help on the front end, because the economy drives a lot of things in this world. You know, someone wise once said to me, if something's bad happening in the world, usually someone's making money on it. Mm-hmm. So it's like, I really started to touch into like, how can the economy itself be a problem, but also a solution to addressing our largest social and environmental problems? And so I sort of, tiptoed and fell down and failed my way out of the criminal justice world and got into sustainability consulting. And that sort of eventually led to finding out about the B Corp movement, which really sort of connected all the things I was most excited about with, you know, a certification that promised, to really distinguish between good companies and just good marketing, you know, a legal piece which allows entrepreneurs the legal protection to pursue more than just profits, because there's a lot of pressure on entrepreneurs to maximize profits. So that was really my inspiration, was moving from the sort of challenge to the opportunity with business.
So the B Corp handbook, we're going to get to that, but there may be some listeners out there that maybe confuse the B Corp with a benefit corporation or don't even know exactly what the heck we're talking about if we say the B Corp. Is this a club? What do I got to do to get in it?
Yeah, that's a great point. So the original intention behind the B Corp movement was these two key insights that the founders of the B Corp movement had. You know, one was this idea of, you know, it's fine to support, you know, a company that has, say, organic milk or a building that's energy efficient, but, you know, are the people, you know, making the organic milk being paid, you know, really low wages, or is the company inside the green building, you know, dumping toxic effluents into the river behind their building? So they said, we need a whole certification so that you can see a whole company and whether a whole company is quote unquote doing good versus just the product or service being quote unquote good. So that was the first thing they realized. The second thing they realized is that in order to allow entrepreneurs to grow their business and eventually take on investors and potentially, you know, sell their business, they said that the challenge that a lot of entrepreneurs and even their board members face is that there's this constant pressure to make as much money as possible, no matter what the outcome is for people and planet. Mm-hmm. And so they created a legal structure that would allow, again, entrepreneur to say, you know, I value profits. We do have to make profits to be a business, but I'm not going to put profits on a pedestal above all other things. So I'm going to consider profits, but also consider workers, community, and the environment when making decisions. And so that was the original genesis behind the B Corp movement. And the way that they've affected that in the world is that you can be a certified B Corporation anywhere in the United States, actually anywhere in the world, which is it's basically an online assessment that any company can take. It just, you know, walks you through a series of questions, asks you things like, you know, do you allow your employees to volunteer, or do you do any charitable giving? Do you have, you know, energy efficient light bulbs? It kind of takes you through this really cool assessment process that gets you thinking. And then once a company meets a certain minimum standard, they can apply for certification. Now, the legal piece that you had mentioned, the benefit corporation, that's only available in states that have passed legislation allowing them to become a benefit corporation. And I'm pretty sure, I should have checked before the show, but I'm pretty sure Montana does allow benefit corporations.
It does. Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. So you knew ahead of me. So, yeah.
Yes. And, I almost became a benefit corporation, but I was kind of talked out of it because I was told, and this kind of leads to another question we're going to talk about here, is from an investment standpoint. I was told that if I was a benefit corporation, that investors would not want to invest in my company. What do you got to say about that?
Well, it is a relatively common piece of advice, usually from attorneys or potentially investors who are not quite as, it's a newer legal structure. And so when someone is giving an entrepreneur advice about forming a business, the lowest risk thing to do is to give that entrepreneur advice for things that they know 100% work and have worked in the past. Mm-hmm. It's just the challenge is that those sort of older legal structures don't have the same commitment to benefiting all of your stakeholders, so workers, community, and the environment. So there's some attorneys and investors may look at the benefit corporation and say, well, this isn't quite as widely adopted as, say, other corporate forms, so I don't recommend that you do it. And, you know, it's interesting because a lot of investors, you know, I'm based in the San Francisco Bay Area, there are there's a ton of examples of companies or traditional investors who have invested in companies that are benefit corporations. You know, there's Ripple Foods, which is I think it's like a snow pea milk, you know, so it's like one of these like variations of this new plant-based diet, but they got $100 million from people like Goldman Sachs and Google Ventures. And so I think that it's starting to be more disproven that benefit corporations would be a turnoff to investment capital. So, yeah.
In the B Corp handbook, you talk about so many great examples of B Corp companies and how they are using business for good. And I keep thinking, you know, if that is the case, then, you know, where are they getting all their money? I mean, obviously, there's something happening here. Impact investing is becoming more of a preference for some investors.
Absolutely. And, you know, what's really interesting is, you know, we've been seeing investors, not only traditional investors, but it's sort of like the kids of, so say it's a family with multi-generational wealth or, you know, larger pension funds or sort of venture capitalists. So it's like as the millennials are starting to take over the companies from their parents, and they're starting to say, hey, you know, why aren't these social and environmental values a part of our investment thesis? Because we really see that this is not a choice. You don't have to choose between profits or doing good. You should be able to do both. And so it's definitely a huge trend. And I mean, the biggest maybe indicator of that is Larry Fink, the CEO of BlackRock, which is actually the largest asset manager in the world, $6.2 trillion of assets under management, actually said in his annual letter to shareholders or to CEOs, these are CEOs that BlackRock would invest in. He said that companies that don't have a social mission or don't pursue purposes other than profits will lose the trust of their stakeholders. They'll actually lose customers and lose employees. And so he said, we want to see any of our investments from our $6.2 trillion asset fund need to have a social mission beyond profits. And so that was really like, wow, this is becoming mainstream if he's talking about it.
And that's refreshing. I posted one of your podcasts on our Facebook page. And when we come back, we're going to take just a quick music break here. I would like to talk about that interview and your podcast. How's that sound?
Absolutely. Sounds great.
Okay. We'll be right back. Thanks for listening. This is Heartstock Radio.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. This is Heartstock Radio. I'm Carol Murphy. And this afternoon, this evening, we're speaking with Brian Honeyman. And Brian has written a book called The B Corp Handbook, and he also has a podcast. We posted on our Facebook page if you want to check out that podcast, Charles Eisenstein. Tell us a little bit about how you got into podcasting and how you find people like Charles to interview.
It's a great question, Carol. The podcast is called Next Economy Now, and that how we got into it was actually, it wasn't started out as a podcast for other people. We had within our company at Lyft Economy, we're a 6-person team, and my company does some odd things that are odd in the traditional business world, like value-based invoicing. Like, we allow our customers to sort of adjust the invoice down or up if they feel like they didn't get enough value. And so I would start interviewing our partners and say, why did you do this? And how did you think of it? And eventually we said, well, these are sort of interesting conversations. Let's just put them up on the web. And so that was the genesis behind Next Economy Now. And then we said, well, we should probably interview actual people besides ourselves. So we started reaching out to others. Yeah.
And how did you find Charles? That is really a good interview.
Yeah, so Charles Eisenstein, for folks who don't know, I actually had not heard of him until joining Lyft Economy. My business partners had known about him. He wrote a book. He's written several books. One of his more famous ones is Sacred Economics. It's basically, you know, how do we go back to the gift economy? You know, so he's very forward-thinking, sort of beyond even B Corps. And another book he wrote about 5 years ago is called "A World That Our Hearts, A Better World That Our Hearts Know Is Possible." And so the podcast with Charles was just basically asking him things that he had written about in that book around things like, you know, how do you deal with the sense of urgency that we all have to solve these gigantic challenges in the world? And, you know, what do you choose to work on when there's so much suffering? And he was really helping me. And in the book, he talks about this, you know, there's not really a right answer. Like, this is where I think he really is insightful above other folks that I've spoken with. It's like he says that, you know, if you're helping homelessness, what I've heard, he says, what I've heard is sometimes there's an eco warrior who comes in and says, you know, why are you working on homelessness? If we don't solve climate change, homelessness isn't a problem because we'll all be dead. But what Charles likes to say is, how do you know that homelessness isn't solving climate change? And like, how do you really know that certain actions are not tied to other, like, as humans, we tend to be very confident that X leads to Y. And what he was really helping me think through, and he talks about in the book, is maybe helping homelessness and doing other things, like he was talking about, you know, taking care of a sick grandparent. Like, how do you know that it doesn't help climate change in a sort of morphic or deeper level? Because, and so it was just a really interesting podcast interview because he really challenged me to think beyond, like, oh yeah, there's always a right answer of everything you have to do, and just listen more to what you're called to do rather than be hard on yourself for not doing X or Y. I think that was really powerful for me.
Yeah, and there were so many broad perspective approaches that he talked about in that interview. And that, I thought, one of the reasons why I really loved it is because it was like the foundation or the base of the pyramid that B Corp sits on, and that your book sits on. So this kind of broader, you know, making the planet better, you know, it's not just a hokey pokey, that's a nice little girl, you know, little pat on the head. That's a nice idea. It's really huge when you start thinking about things in a very broad perspective. So the B Corp, maybe it's baby steps towards gift economy.
Well, you know, it's interesting, right? Because I think that Charles would say you know, what I've started thinking of later is like, what's the 500-year plan? Because when you think of it on a 500-year scale, things like gift economy seems more maybe possible. You're like, okay, I guess in 500 years that might be possible. You know, so he tends to help. And I think with B Corp too, it's like, you know, it's not like tomorrow B Corp is going to change the entire economy, because there's only 2,500 certified B Corps in the whole world. And, you know, I think there's 7 million businesses just in the United States. You know, this is drop in the bucket stuff. However, I think in Malcolm Gladwell's book, The Tipping Point, I think there's something around like 10 to 14% adoption of an idea, it flips over into the majority. And so with B Corp and this idea of business for good, it actually is quite possible now that we have companies like Danone. North America just became the largest B Corp in the world. You know, Patagonia is a B Corp, King Arthur Flour, Method Soaps, Seventh Generation, and Ben & Jerry's, of course. So, you know, a lot of large brands and small companies too have really taken this to heart. And so I think it's possible to really shift the larger economy.
So talk a little bit about the B Corp handbook. What inspired you to write that? And yeah, how long did it take?
Yeah, great question. The inspiration was, one of the things I do in my consulting practice is help companies certify as B Corps, because it's, it can be a fairly intensive process to dig up all the data and improve practices to meet their performance standards. And I sort of realized that there was no single resource. There was no book previous to this book that you could just hand to a CEO or someone who's interested and say, hey, you know, here's everything you need to know about B Corps in one place. All the information was sort of spread out on websites and one sheet handouts. And so the inspiration was to actually solve one of my own problems, which was I needed something to be able to give to folks as a leave behind or something of interest to them to say, hey, this is a really cool movement. And it took a long time. It took probably, not a ridiculous amount of time. I guess it was like 12 to 18 months. I think that's, yeah, probably 18 months all in all, like thinking about it from concept to actually publication. So luckily it wasn't like a 12-year book project.
So as I was just driving by the National Bison Range on my way home, I was thinking about the next question, which is Fund for Good.
Yeah, the Force for Good Fund. Yeah,
Force for Good Fund. And Pine Ridge Reservation, I think that they received some of your funds to help bring back buffalo. Is that right?
Yeah. There's a company on Pine Ridge Reservation called Native American Natural Foods, which produces the Tonka Bar. If folks have ever heard of that, it's a sort of like a meat snack. So it's a buffalo bar based on wasna, the traditional Lakota recipe.
Kind of like beef jerky.
Yes, exactly.
Like. So Force for Good, where was the impetus for that? Take us on that journey.
Sure. So the Force for Good Fund was a idea of, we had, through Lyft Economy, we've helped about 100 or more social enterprises with consulting assistance, but we realized that a lot of companies who are trying to do good also need investment capital. And so we said, what if we could raise a small fund, $1 million fund was the idea, and try to make 10, $100,000 investments into 10 companies and focus them on women and people of color owned businesses, basically because a lot of the stuff going on in the world, and there's a lot of support for white male owned businesses currently in the economy. And so we kind of said, you know, who are some really interesting companies who are doing something outside the norm? And so the company Native American Natural Foods is a great example, because they are trying to return the buffalo to Pine Ridge and to the grassland prairie. And yet they've been having a terrible time raising money, because a lot of traditional investors say, well, we don't really know, like, you know, the mission of returning the buffalo doesn't quite sit with just how do you grow a company as much as possible. And so we helped them with $100,000 seed funding to launch a separate company that works with them to basically help native ranchers raise buffalo and keep the profits from raising the buffalo within the native community. So it usually goes outside of the reservation.
Mm-hmm. So yeah. What are some of your other success stories and companies? I mean, I was looking on the site and could spend a lot of time looking at all the people that you've helped.
Yeah, well, Lynn Johnson from Spotlight Girls, mm-hmm. one of your former guests.
Yes.
Let's see, who else? There's a coffee company based in Oakland in California that's called Red Bay Coffee, owned by a gentleman named Keba Conte. He's an African-American gentleman, hires formerly incarcerated employees, and really focuses on building local community and looking at sustainability in the supply chain of coffee. He was recently in the news because, as folks may remember, Starbucks recently had some negative publicity around arresting two African-American men who were just sort of waiting in the store. And Keba, as a black man, wasn't planning this. This sort of coincided, but he was opening one of his first stores outside of California in Philadelphia. Mm. And so he was there and talking to the press around, what does it look like to have an inclusive coffee shop? And like, what does inclusion look like? Not just on like having a training for employees, but also across ownership and the employee base as well. So that was that's another one. I can keep going on, but I just want to be respectful of the time as well.
Yeah, sure we have about a minute left. So tell folks how they might reach you and where they could buy your book.
Sure. Yeah, if folks are interested, check us out at Lyft Economy. That's LIFTEconomy.com. Our podcast is Next Economy Now. You can get it on iTunes and all the major podcasting platforms. And then the book... you can go to Amazon, but I do, encourage folks to go to their local bookstore, independent retailer, and you can even buy a used copy at a B Corp company called Better World Books. So betterworldbooks.com has the B Corp handbook as well.
That's amazing. It was really cool, and I know we have more to talk about, so we'll have you back, I hope. And this is Heartstock Radio. We've been speaking with Ryan Honeyman. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Carol.
We'll be back next week. Peace out. Bye-bye.
I saw my people about a really forfeit.
Heartstock Radio is a production of KBMF 102.5, Butte America Radio. Hear our live programs every Friday at 4 p.m. Mountain Standard Time via live stream at ButteAmericaRadio.org.
Oh, nobody living can ever stop me as I go walking of that freedom highway. Oh, nobody living can make me feel that this land was made for you and